Welcome to Season 4 of the Fight Science Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are bringing our focus to one of the most exciting and emerging areas of nutrition science, gut health. We all have an understanding of how our genetics and lifestyle choices can determine our health. However, in recent years, much attention has been given to how the foods we eat, activity we do, and lives we lead can alter the bacteria in our gut, which can have a profound effect on both our physical and mental health. To help us explore this topic, I've invited some of the world's top researchers and practitioners in this space to help us better understand how to optimize our gut health. Today, my guest is Dr. Francine Marcus. Dr. Francine is a National Heart Foundation Future Leader Fellow at the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute and a former National Health and Medical Research Council and Heart Foundation Early Career Fellow. She has a Bachelor of Science with First Class Honours in Genetics and a Master's in Molecular Biology and Genetics. Dr. Francine was awarded her PhD in 2012 in the field of molecular genetics of hypertension. Her research interests include finding new therapies and early markers to prevent cardiovascular disease, in particular, high blood pressure and heart failure. Her research has shown that a diet rich in fiber is able to lower blood pressure and improve heart function through the modulation of the bacteria in our gut. In this episode, we discuss Dr. Francine's incredible personal story of her survival of ovarian cancer and how that has fueled her desire to create meaningful research that will impact many people worldwide. This is a great episode with so much good information, so let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live, so back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. So today I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Francine Marcus. Marcus, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, that's good.
All right, Dr. Marcus, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. Now, this is going to be a really interesting episode. Again, season four, we're talking all about gut health and we're going in all different areas of gut health. We've had gut health experts come in from all different backgrounds, but none more interesting than yours. When I read your background, I thought, wow, I've never really thought about the interaction of how gut health can play with hypertension and with our heart health. And after running this season, I've kind of come to realize how little I knew about gut health.
Thank you so much, Jordan, for the invitation. And I'm really excited to be talking to you about high blood pressure and how there is an interaction with the gut.
So Dr. Francine, can you talk to us? Firstly, just give us a little bit about your background. First came in, what you did in your PhD and how you got working with gut health.
Okay, that's going to be a long story now. So I came to Australia back in 2006 to have a gap year. And while I was here, I fell in love with Australia and I decided that I wanted to stay. So I was very fortunate to be offered a PhD scholarship at the University of Sydney, and where I did then my PhD in the genomics of high blood pressure. At that time, there wasn't really talks about the gut microbiota and how it could potentially interact with blood pressure, the cardiovascular system. But my background, my expertise is in molecular genomics. So it is what I found over the years is that it is like a highly transferable skill into this area, because basically the way that we determine microbes is through the sequencing of the genome, which is the same that we do with all the other types of studies that we look into different tissues as well. So so I started studying gut health specifically back in 2015. It came a bit out of the blue as a combination of different factors. One of the factors was that I had moved my then postdoctoral fellowship to the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute, where my supervisor was collaborating with now a very good mentor and friend, who does a lot of work in that area, and that got my interest. But also, I don't know if you read that in my story, in 2015, I was also diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And I was 31 years old. It came as a big shock to me. And it was a bit of a wake-up call that I didn't want just to be doing research, that I was finding a mechanism or was finding something that I didn't know whether someone was ever going to be able to use. I wanted to do research that was going to directly benefit patients. So that's basically how I came to the whole gut health and high blood pressure.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think there's so many things we can get into, but Dr. Francine, just to start, can we kind of go over just the basics of what is hypertension? Can we go through what causes it? And then we'll work our way up and how the gut microbiota kind of influences this.
So high blood pressure is like most of us would have been to the doctor, and it's one of the most basic tests that they would do. That they'll put a cuff in your arm, they inflate the cuff, and that will determine the maximum pressure and the lowest pressure that is equivalent to the pressure that is inside your heart, inside like your arteries. This is important because we know that having high blood pressure, and in Australia be higher than 140 millimeters mercury systolic or 90 millimeters mercury diastolic, is the number one risk factor for death globally, because it is the underlying cause of several different types of cardiovascular disease, such as having a heart attack, having a stroke. Over time, if uncontrolled high blood pressure can lead to heart failure, and there is even evidence these days that it can lead to some types of dementia. So it is a major cause of mortality, but also morbidity in our community. And one of the main issues that we find is that hypertension is what we call a preventable risk factor. We know that even for the origins of hypertension are very complex. You have interaction of genes with environmental risk factors, and now we also find potentially with microbial risk factors. We know that you can intervene to try to lower blood pressure, and that's really important.
Yeah, yeah. Doctor, can we go through, before we talk about the gut bacteria in specific, what are some of the risk factors for hypertension in a general sense?
Yeah, so one very important risk factor that relates to the gut is diet. So we know the diets that are high in fat and high in sodium, such as our typical Western diet, it's usually associated with higher blood pressure, while diets that are low in sodium, low in fat, and also high in fiber, which is one of my main research interests, they're usually associated with lower blood pressure. And that's what we'll see, for example, in like very famous, like the Mediterranean diet. And also there is a diet that was specifically designed to try to lower blood pressure called the dietary approaches to stop hypertension, or the DASH diet.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. Yeah, I think everyone that's done any nutrition or dietetics at university knows the DASH diet. I think we, when I went through that, it was quite popular. It still is quite popular. Can we start talking about a bit of your research, doctor? And we could go for days. I think if anyone's done a bit of research on you, it's just pages and pages and pages of the great work that you've done. But let's talk about the work you've done in fiber and how that's helped to blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the studies that we have done so far, that have been published so far, they have been in animal models of cardiovascular disease. So the first study that we did, we looked into whether we could use a high fiber diet, and being high fiber, I mean high resistant starch diet specifically, to lower blood pressure and also decrease not just the blood pressure, but also looking into markers of heart disease. So looking, for example, when you have high blood pressure, one of the common things that happen is that you have some tissue damage in the heart, and the heart over time can increase. And having a bigger heart in this setting is not a good thing, because the heart becomes bigger but less functional. So it's less able to pump, for example, or to relax. So we have the replacement of some of traditional heart cells with these other cells that make the heart really stiff, so the heart can't function properly. So what we observed was that if we treated animals with a diet high in fiber, or also directly with some metabolites or substances that are produced by the microbiota, we were able to decrease blood pressure, decrease this stiffening of the heart, decrease the heart size, and so on. So all my studies are based on the concept that when we eat certain types of fermentable fiber, such as resistant starches, they'll pass undigested through our gastrointestinal system until they reach the large intestine. And there they'll be fermented and basically broken down by the gut microbiota, especially bacteria in this case. And when the bacteria feed on this fiber for us, they release as a consequence certain substances, some that are called short-chain fatty acids that I'm sure you have heard a lot lately. So these short-chain fatty acids, the three main short-chain fatty acids, this acetate, propionate, and butyrate. And while they can have some localized effects, so for example, butyrate is very good in keeping our gut healthy, feeding the gut cells directly, we can also have these short-chain fatty acids being uptaken and distributed to the rest of the body. Well, we believe they have a role in lowering blood pressure. So we confirmed that high fiber diet and acetate were able to decrease blood pressure. But what we found as well is that if we would give the animals this, like a high fiber diet or acetate, and then looked into the types of genes that are being expressed in the heart or in the kidney, it completely changed how like our heart is functioning at a molecular level and how our kidneys are functioning at a molecular level. It decreased a lot of traditional pathways that we know are involved in the development of heart disease. And that was a very, very exciting finding at the time. What I became then interested over time was, how about if you have a diet that is low in fiber, what happens to the cardiovascular system? And that's what we published recently, that if we give animals a diet low in fiber, and we then do a very small challenge to see whether they would go on to develop high blood pressure and also heart disease, they basically, the ones that have a low fiber diet, they go on and they develop like all the cardiovascular phenotype we're seeing. But if we give them a high fiber diet, they are completely protected, and we're able to this happens through the microbes in the gut. We're able to transfer that to animals that don't have any microbes, and we're able to replicate the same phenotype. So it was quite an amazing phenotype. But what was really exciting was that even in a low fiber diet, if we would add then acetate, butyrate, and propionate, the three main short-chain fatty acids, independently or together, were able to still prevent the development of heart disease and high blood pressure independently of whether they're having fiber or not. So it shows to us that having these short-chain fatty acids is potentially a new therapeutic approach. But of course, the main issue that we're facing at the moment is that there is not enough evidence in the literature to support that in people. And in the end of the day, that's what we want to treat. We don't want to treat mice, we want to treat people. So we now have been running for the past year a clinical trial where we're using a modified fiber that has been further enriched with some of the short-chain fatty acids to try to lower blood pressure. But that's still ongoing. So unfortunately, I can't tell you the results yet, but hopefully by the end of the year, we should have an indication of whether that's potentially a new approach to lower blood pressure.
Wow. Yeah, that's phenomenal, hey. So, Dr. Francine, is it, and correct me here if this process is right, is it the short-chain fatty acids that are producing this phenotype that's more favorable? And is it the microbiota that is producing the short-chain fatty acids? So, in theory, yes, you could put the microbiota in there to produce these short-chain fatty acids and still get the benefits? Or do you need the fiber to do it? Is it the whole system? Does that make sense?
It's a very complicated question. It's a very good point, though. One of the things that I'm not particularly a big fan of probiotics in a setting such as this is that you can add the bacteria, but if you're not eating enough fiber, you're still not going to get the short-chain fatty acids. And also, if you're getting the probiotics and introducing new microbes, but you're not feeding them what they need to thrive, they're not going to stay there. So I think like it's a misconcept that we can just go, you know, with the probiotics and try to fix the problem. Like if you're missing also those specific types of bacteria, you might benefit from a probiotic, but otherwise you might not really see an effect, especially if you're missing the fiber.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that's been blowing my mind this entire podcast series, is just how complex this whole system is. And and how huge and just the vast scale of it. And you're talking numbers in the trillions. So I think it's important to define the resistant starch. I don't think it's something we've gone over on the podcast. Can we talk about, if we're talking in terms of, say, dietary sources, what are good dietary sources of resistant starch?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, because most people don't know like resistant starch as a like a fiber, a vegetable fiber, and there's a lot of misconceptions around. And you know, you're a dietitian, you know this better than me, about like grains and also about like flour and other types of food. So we know that like good sources of resistant starches can be, for example, uncooked oats, bananas when they are on the green side, beans as well, they'll be high in resistant starches. And surprisingly, you can also cook potatoes and pasta and cool them down, and then the amounts of resistant starch increase a lot after that. So there might be some opportunity to reheat and keep that different structure of the starch. Yeah, there's some discussions about that. But yeah, you probably know this better than I do.
No. And it's I think it's interesting. I remember learning about resistant starch probably over a decade ago. And at the time I was like, it's probably just a phase that's coming through and it's not going to be. And now resistant starch is probably the most important type of fiber. Dr. Francine, so you were talking about earlier with the microbiota. Are you tracking the genetics of the microbiota as well?
No, we track changes in the microbiome as well, because this is important, because that tells us what type of microbes are there and what they're actually doing. So we can track, for example, whether we are indeed increasing short-chain fatty acid producers. And that gives us an indication of function as well, which is really important to see the outcome. What we have found now in some unpublished studies is that, although like we have the short chain fatty acids that are protective, you can also have, if you're not having enough fiber, if you're having a low fiber diet, you can also have other metabolites that potentially could be detrimental. So it is important to know what microbes are there, and that also helps us to understand what they do.
Yeah, and I think while we're on the topic, it might be worth discussing, and you can give a lot more insight to it, the microbiome and the bacteria themselves. Organisms that have a genetic code that's far bigger than the human code. Is there some truth to it that, say, if you're eating this high fiber diet compared to this low fiber diet, you're almost switching on the more favorable genes within the microbiota and they're producing the short chain fatty acids? Is that how this works, or am I a bit off the mark there?
Look, it is a highly complex system, and I won't pretend that I know everything about it. But basically, the microbiota is quite agile and quite plastic, in the sense that even if you start eating something today, in a few days, you already see changes in the populations of microbes in your gut. So we do that through sequencing of the genome. That's the easiest way these days to do it, because that also facilitates the determination of bacteria that traditionally wouldn't grow in vitro outside the body, because, for example, they can't survive in oxygen or something like that. So it is a very complex environment, and I think we're only scratching the surface at the moment. So a lot of studies, including some of ours, they have only focused in bacteria, but we know that it's not just bacteria that live down there. And there's many, many other different microorganisms as well that can be interacting, and it's a community really. But it is a very plastic community, so you can change it very rapidly. And you can then, for example, favor the growth of certain types of microbes if you're feeding them different types of food. And that will activate genes that they need, for example, for digestion of that type of food. So you're not wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong. It is much, much more complicated than I think even I can possibly understand.
Yeah, I think complicated is definitely the good word to use there. But it is fascinating. It's fascinating nonetheless. Can we talk about the research that you did with sodium as well? And you also found a connection with sodium and the gut microbiota and blood pressure.
Yeah. We did a commentary recently on sodium. We actually haven't done any work on sodium ourselves. Although I'm doing right now with a collaborator from the US, we're analyzing some of their data And it seems there's enough evidence in the literature to support that sodium also influences the microbiota. That's not that surprising considering that a lot of sodium gets absorbed in the intestine as well. And I think one of the main questions is whether fiber can offset the detrimental effects of the sodium. But sodium is very interesting, and similarly to fiber, we're finding that it can interact with our body and our cardiovascular system through many different pathways. So we can have, for example, changes in the immune system. So it becomes a more pro-inflammatory immune system that can drive an increase in blood pressure. You can also have the production of certain metabolites that then go on to stimulate the production of some also very traditional pathways that increase blood pressure. So there are several different mechanisms that are acting there.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. Talking about those metabolites, one of these papers talks about the dietary supplements which release high levels of gut metabolites to lower the blood pressure. What type of dietary supplements were you using in these studies?
Yeah, so these will be resistant starches specifically, but in our clinical trial, we use a new fiber that was developed by CSIRO, but it's not commercially available not yet, but perhaps if we find, so in our study, we had to work with a research dietitian and a research chef to put together this fiber in food so people could actually eat it, because this study is like a proper crossover, double-blind, randomized clinical trial. And we just found that otherwise people could tell in which arm of the study they would be. So we worked with the research chef to actually develop different types of food that contain this fiber that are the same with the placebo or the fiber. So we have, for example, several types of muffins. And also we have frittatas, we have arancini balls, burgers, things like that that also are very high in resistant starches with this special type of fiber. So hopefully if this goes well, we might be able to find that a muffin a day keeps the doctor away, but we'll see how that goes.
And for that type of fiber, obviously it's not commercially available, but that is the same resistant starch that you would be finding in the foods that we were talking about earlier. Is that correct?
No. For the animal study so far, we use just resistant starch, just plain resistant starch. Well, this is a much more sophisticated starch. So in this case, we haven't published yet, but we have some unpublished data in animal models only. Showing into the different aspects of what this does.
Yeah, so a bit of a watch this space type of fiber then.
Yes. Oh, we have lots of very exciting studies that should be coming up in hopefully this year or next year, looking into different aspects of this, of how this actually is working, and looking into specific receptors and mechanisms, and also potentially into an intergenerational effect.
Yeah, amazing. Dr. Francine, obviously talking to you with your research, there's a lot, like you spoke about earlier, there's a lot of, I feel like, emphasis on how this will really help people and how they can actually use this. How you spoke a bit about your experience with ovarian cancer and how that influenced it. How much is that influencing what you're trying to research now and how you're going about the research?
I decided that there were wonderful researchers in Australia and in the world that do research on ovarian cancer, and I felt it was too close to home for me to change my field of research to invest on that. I feel incredibly privileged to be able to have survived, and I have now reached my 5-year cancer-free mark, which is just remarkable. When I was diagnosed with advanced stage ovarian cancer, so the prognosis was really poor. And I know that people that are diagnosed at the same time as I was with the same stage, the prognosis is about 50% survival in 5 years. And out of the other 50% that are still alive, like me, the majority is actually sick again. So I feel really, really privileged. And what I decided to do was to try to focus on ways that I can help with the expertise that I have already developed in terms of cardiovascular disease. And there is a huge amount of work that we can do there, because we know that hypertension in this case is known as a silent killer, as much as ovarian cancer is, because a lot of people that have high blood pressure, they don't know they have it, because they, unless they get checked, they just go on with their lives, because you don't have any signs of having high blood pressure unless you have very, very high blood pressure. And what will happen is that over time, this will lead to damage in a lot of like essential organs, such as like our arteries that can just burst, such as like having like a stroke, or it will damage the heart and the kidneys and other organs as well. So it was too close to home to work on ovarian cancer, but I decided that I was going to focus in hypertension instead. And being cardiovascular disease is still the number one cause of death in Australia. So it is still highly prevalent, and many aspects of it, including high blood pressure, can be preventable. So I really hope that my research will try to help with that.
Hey guys, I just quickly want to give a shout out to the team over at Macro Mike, only because snacking is my favorite thing to do in this life, and Macro Mike has changed the game when it comes to healthy snacks. What they do is use clean and healthy plant-based ingredients, and they make healthy versions of all of those things that you thought you weren't supposed to eat. They make peanut butter and mixes for cookies, brownies, and donuts that you can whip up in literally minutes. And best of all, these are all completely clean and taste beyond phenomenal. They also make protein supplements, protein bars, plant-based aminos, and a great product for your gut health called the Gut Doctor. The flavors that these guys have are seriously insane. Some of my favorites are chocolate hazelnut, Hawaiian salted vanilla, and strawberry jam donut. For a self-confessed snacker, these are a lifesaver. They've been nice enough to give my listeners 10% with the code TFD10, so you guys can try them for yourself. Alrighty, back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. It's amazing. And it's amazing research. Hey, Dr. Francine, I know this might be a bit of conjecture and more opinion than the research. And I know you focus very heavily on cardiovascular, but the more I talk to experts in this field, the more I realize that gut health is kind of everything. It kind of contributes everything. What are your thoughts? Again, it can be anecdotal, it can be your opinion. How far of a reach does a healthy microbiome have in terms of your health?
I think there is enough evidence to support that, like, as you said, like, there's barely any disease, I think, these days that doesn't seem to be affected by the gut. And that's because of several different aspects. It's because of metabolites that are produced. It's because of the interaction of the gut with our immune system as well. And we know that the immune system influences so many other diseases as well. I think there is a lot of evidence for many other diseases. So having a diet that is high in fiber, that is going to feed your microbes, it is, in my opinion, going to be beneficial for.
Yeah, I won't ask you. I want to ask you one more question before I ask you the dreaded, what's the best diet for the optimal gut health? I'll wait that, because everyone kind of rolls their eyes and laughs, and I want to get give you the chance to answer that. But the most recent paper that you brought out, the role of gut pH in blood pressure regulation, can you talk to us about that, and how do those two relate in terms of regulating your blood pressure?
Ah, yes, that's one of our new grants supported by the Heart Foundation. So I'm a Heart Foundation Future Leader Fellow, and we have been very fortunate that they have supported a few different aspects of our research. So that's an ongoing study as well. So we are recruiting. We are finally given the go ahead now that the restrictions are being lifted to start recruiting again. And I think a concept that we are trying to understand is short-chain fatty acids are acids after all. And we think, like, by lowering the pH in the gut, we might have some beneficial aspects in terms of blood pressure regulation. We don't have much more than that at the moment that I can share. Watch this space, because, and if you're in Melbourne, definitely come and talk to us, because we are recruiting at the moment, and I'll be volunteering for my study as well. And I think it'll be very interesting. We're using some very cool technology, some pills that can measure, for example, the pH of your whole gastrointestinal tract. And I think that will be some really interesting results coming up.
Is that kind of the research question that you're looking at? Is there a optimal acidity for these microbes to work in to release these metabolites, or can you give that information out, or is it close?
No, we're interested in more understanding the how the levels of the metabolites interact with the pH in a human body, and how that might be, for example, activating the immune system. I don't know if like there is an ideal gut pH, and I'm not familiar with that at the moment. But that might be something that we can look into as well. And there might be some compromise that you need to do, that if you have a very low gut pH, you might not be allowing for certain types of microbes to grow. But at the same time, you might be selecting with microbes that are considered commensal and they'll be beneficial to different aspects of human health.
Yeah. Hey, Dr. Francine, who can benefit from this? Is this just for people who, say, have early stage cardiovascular disease? Can people benefit from, you know, just doing this in a preventative cause, or who can benefit from this?
Yeah, so hopefully anyone that has high blood pressure, and that's what we're trying to achieve overall. But that's something that, of course, we need to do many more studies to determine. The good thing is that, good thing for us in terms of the studying and who can benefit from it, is that high blood pressure is highly prevalent. So we're looking into about 1 in every 3 to 4 adults in Australia having high blood pressure. And as we age, rates of hypertension increase dramatically. By the time that we reach 70 years of age, about 70% of the population will have high blood pressure. So hopefully it can benefit a lot of people in the future. But that's still, of course, to be determined. So we still don't know whether this trial is going to work. And if it does, then we still need to determine what groups, including age groups, but also the comorbidities. So we know that hypertension is also very common, but so are other diseases, such as having type 2 diabetes or even having a very high BMI as well. And all of that can influence then other aspects of the body, the microbiota, and so on. So it is very complicated to determine at this time point who is going to benefit from it. But I think it is a very exciting future and field also to be working at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, again, this might not be directly with your evidence, but you kind of touched on that cardiovascular disease is kind of part of this bigger problem of the metabolic syndrome. Do you feel like, say, this dietary approach of high resistance starch, will it have this same effect with these other metabolic diseases like type 2 diabetes and other lifestyle diseases?
There's actually clinical trials going on that at the moment. So one of my mentors that I mentioned earlier, Professor Charles McKay, he has done a study that was published a few years ago in Nature Immunology, which is like a very prestigious journal, showing that the same diet that we're testing now in people was able to significantly decrease type 1 diabetes prevalence. And they're doing other studies at the moment to determine type 2 as well. There's other colleagues from Monash as well that are doing trials looking into just the effect of resistant starch, not modified, but just resistant starches, to try to decrease type 2 diabetes and damage that usually causes to the kidneys, for example. So there is definitely avenues for that.
Is that related to the short-chain fatty acids as well, the aspartame, perforate,
yes.
Butyrate? Yep.
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. All right, I'm going to ask you now, Dr. Francine, the dreaded question about gut health. If there was a recommended diet to promote overall gut health, what would it be that you recommend?
That's a very complicated question.
That's the response I've been getting.
Yeah, so there was a study from like one of the biggest labs in the US that looked into thousands of people. And what they found was that there was more diverse microbiota in people that had a different, more diverse diet as well. Surprise, surprise. So based on that study, they recommended that it would have at least 20 different types of food that are prebiotics, so to feed the microbes, that, for example, would range from different vegetables to grains to nuts to all sorts of things that can feed the microbes. and also fiber. So the more types of prebiotic, and this is like highly unprocessed food that you can have, the higher the diversity. There is some evidence in the literature as well that more diverse microbes, more diverse microbiota is better for your overall health. But that's still something that we're still in our baby steps. So it is very hard to determine. But I think the main thing is, like, if you have more different types of microbes, you're more likely to be have microbes that can produce, for example, short-chain fatty acids or produce other metabolites as well. It's not just short-chain fatty acids that are being produced. There'll be many other metabolites that might also have a health benefit that we still don't know as much about. So I think having a very varied, healthy, like unprocessed food, that, and that's like dietary guidelines 101, that you can, that's going to help you to produce a very varied type of microbiota.
Yeah, you said earlier as well that you could get these changes quite fast as well within a matter of days, that you can see the changes in the microbiome.
Yes, you can. But at the same time that the changes and the good microbes might, you might be able to increase the numbers quite quickly, you can also get rid of them quite quickly. So long term, that's the main thing that you need to focus, is having this varied, healthy food, unprocessed food long term. Because otherwise it becomes a microbiota that can change quite rapidly, but not necessarily always in a good way. So consistency is also important at long term.
Excellent. So lots of variety, highly unprocessed foods, lots of good sources of fiber, and be consistent with it to make sure that you've got the good bugs in there and they're staying there for a long period of time.
Exactly.
Excellent. All right, Dr. Francine, we might wrap this up now, but if, say, people are listening to this and I'm sure they'll want to learn more about this and read more about your fascinating research, what's the best way for them to follow your work or get in contact with you? What's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. If they put on Google Francine Marcus Monash, they'll find our website, our lab website. We have information about our clinical trials there. It's marcuslab.com. Otherwise, just Google my name and you'll find lots of information about our studies, some press release, and also some bold photos of me during chemo. So yeah, it's all there. Yeah, very easy to find.
And one last question, Dr. Francine, if there are any resources that people were looking to kind of upskill or educate themselves in the area of gut health, or do you have any favorite resources or favorite books or go-to that you recommend?
Yes, there's a book by Professor Tim Spector called The Diet Myth that is a few years old now. So like not all the research will be updated, but it's a very good book to look into the different aspects of diet and how that, like, he talks a lot about microbiota. There's also a free course. If you want to understand more about the microbiota, there's a free course on Coursera called The Gut Microbiome by Rob Knight and his team in the US. That is also a very good course. So I usually recommend my students when they start in the lab to do that, because that really helps you to understand the microbiome and how, like, what influences it and how it's analyzed.
Awesome. Amazing. Well, Dr. Francine, I appreciate you taking the time, and that was an amazing chat with lots of great information. Dr. Francine, thanks for taking the time.
No, thank you so much for the invitation. My pleasure.
And there it is, another episode of the Bite Science Podcast. Dr. Francine has a remarkable story, and her research is proven to have remarkable potential in affecting the health of millions of people worldwide who suffer from cardiovascular disease. I encourage you to follow Dr. Francine's work as she releases new and exciting research in this area. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, and Spotify, and you'll also be able to download it from our website at www.yourbitedietician.com/podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app, give us a rating, and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.